Welcome to Bewildered. I'm Martha Beck, here with Rowan Mangan. At this crazy moment in history, a lot of people are feeling bewildered, but that actually may be a sign we're on track. Human culture teaches us to come to consensus, but nature, our own true nature, helps us come to our senses. Rowan and I believe that the best way to figure it all out is by going through bewilderment into bewilderment. That's why we're here. For almost 30 years, I've been teaching people to do something that I call reading your internal compasses. I believe we are all born with direction-finding mechanisms that are inherent in us and will help us find our best destiny. A few years ago, though, I realized that a lot of people were getting very, very anxious. And this is true. Anxiety is going nuts all over the planet. So I spent 5 years researching and writing a book about how to read your compasses and lower the anxiety that's getting between you and your right life. And I'm very excited about the book. It's coming out in 2025, but I would love to teach you about it before the book comes out. So this summer, I'm doing a course called The Wayfinder's Compass, Moving Beyond Anxiety. And you can check it out by going to marthabeck.com/compass. And we will have a fabulous time putting you on course for your North Star. Hi, I'm Martha Beck.
And I'm Rowan Mangan. This is another episode of Bewildered, the podcast for people trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. How are you doing, Marty?
I'm good. I have a little bit of a scratchy throat, but nobody panic. It's just one of those things. And if I go during this podcast, don't worry. I'm good. How are you?
I'm going to worry about it. What was that noise again? Yeah, I'm having flashbacks to that show, The Last of Us, but I won't give any spoilers. I'll just tell you.
I will give one spoiler. Yeah, there you go.
A very ambiguous spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Now that you said you had a scratchy throat, now I've got an itchy everything, especially scalp. Is it one of those things where when you hear about itches, everyone gets itchy?
Yes, absolutely. And God forbid you should think about itching while you're meditating.
Oh, God.
6 months of unbearable itching once. Oh,
now my nostrils are itching.
You can't not do it. Now you're just going to be scratching like a monkey through the whole thing. That's okay.
Oh, well.
That's okay. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. What are you trying to figure out?
Oh, Lord. I am so codependent, Ro. I am ridiculously codependent. And here's why. Here's for why this week. I just went to the dentist who replaced, I had a cracking molar in the very back of my face. And, she put in a crown. I have been crowned mm-hmm. on my molar. Mm-hmm. And they make it at the dentist. They like file your tooth down. Then they make a new one and stick it in. And then they say, bite down. How does that feel? And I bit down on what felt like the rock of Gibraltar. Like, what did you jam into my gums, woman? That's what I wanted to say. But I didn't say that. I said, it feels a little big. And she's like, no problem. Brings out her drills. How's that? Still kind of much. How's that? It's still too big. So like 10 times this happened, and the whole time I'm thinking, how many times can I make this woman do the same job? Now she's just thinking, I'm an excellent dentist. I like it to be perfect. I'm thinking, this is the 10th time. This can't go on. So when it was still a little big, I just decided I can live with that.
I'll live with eternal discomfort rather than
save it. But I got used to it so easily, probably at the cost of throwing off my entire bite or something. Oh. And I could not say one more time, go back into my tiny, tiny mouth that they have to use pediatric instruments to work on and file down this normal-sized tooth until it is like my tiny, tiny head. Couldn't.
That reminds me of that thing where I've probably talked about it before, but you know, where you're talking to someone and you can't understand what they've said.
Yes.
And you say, sorry. And then you still don't understand it. And then you say, sorry, one more time. And then you're just up shit creek. Like, there's what can you do? But guess whether it sounded like a question. Me too. Or like, Yeah, or a complaint. Oh, did you? You know, like you don't know. Right.
Oh, I'm flashing back to meeting this Italian woman on the beach when I was like 12. And I told her I lived in Utah. And she said, she kept saying, Utaleka. And I was like, Utaleka? I don't understand. She was trying to say Utah Lake.
Utah Lake, yeah.
And I that scarred me. I lived in Utah. I'd never met someone who didn't speak English. Yeah. And yeah, now you've brought it back and I'm going to need some serious work on myself to get past that one.
Yeah, we'll pick it up. We'll pick it up after the podcast. How's
what
that?
What are you trying to figure out?
This is lame. I'll just tell you, this is a bit lame. But, you know, sometimes those fun thoughts you have as a teenager, oh, this is going to be one of those things you don't relate to, Marty. I'm just thinking of all the reasons this is so wrong. Sometimes I forget that I'm in a foreign culture. And anyway, just say that, like, someone as a teenager discovered weed and the kinds of thoughts that go along with smoking weed.
There were weeds in Utah. I don't know what you mean.
In the Leca? So last night I'm walking past our daughter's bedroom door and she's counting in there, and she counts to 10 brilliantly. I don't want to brag too much, but her 1 to 10 is
even if
superb.
there are only 3 things, she will count them to 10.
Yeah. She will. But she was in her own space in privacy, just pushing her limits a little bit, and after 10 immediately came, and I quote, LFT. And which makes perfect sense. But
totally.
It was like LFT, and I suddenly got transported back to those kind of stoner days and stoner thoughts. And I was like, what if there could be extra numbers in between the numbers that we know about, and just no one's thought of it yet? And what could we do with all those extra numbers, like, if we knew about them and could harness them for good in the world?
Amazing.
I mean, we just have more.
We could make machines. We could make things if we had those extra numbers in between the other numbers.
Whoa, man.
I thought you were going to say that she was counting like an Australian, because I find this absolutely charming.
Y'all
count to 10, and I think you say 11 in the normal way.
But first of all, we don't say y'all, we say use.
Use. Okay, then use go into this. 13, 14, 15, and then 16, 17, 18. And you've got 3 D sounds in the teen category. Mm-hmm. And I've heard other Australians do that. I find it charming and quaint in a very condescending kind of way.
Yeah, no, I can really feel that condescension coming through.
Could you count for us?
All right. And I don't see anything wrong with this, by the way, but interestingly, I'd never noticed it before you brought this up. 11.
Yes.
12. So far, so good, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
13. 14. 15.
Getting there.
16.
There you go.
17.
It actually, the
16, the 17. I think the 16 got a bit of a D on it that time. 16, no, 17, 17, 17.
It's 17. Like the D grows up into a T as you go forward.
These things that happen when you're down there in the Southern Hemisphere.
It's amazing. Oh. You just have to, they had to ship some of their consonants overboard. They'd throw consonants overboard during a sea crossing.
That must have been it. That must have been it. We'll be right back with more Bewildered. I have a favour to ask. You might not know this, but ratings and reviews are like gold in the podcasting universe. They get podcasts in front of more faces, more eyes, more ears, all the bits that you could have a podcast in front of, that's what they do. So it would help us enormously if you would consider going over to your favourite podcasting app, especially if it's Apple, and giving us a few stars, maybe even 5, maybe even 6. If you can find a way to hack the system, I wouldn't complain. And a review would also be wonderful. We read them all and love them. So thank you very much in advance. Let's just go out there and bewilder the world. Mwah.
for almost 30 years, I've been teaching people to do something that I call reading your internal compasses. I believe we are all born with direction-finding mechanisms that are inherent in us and will help us find our best destiny. A few years ago, though, I realized that a lot of people were getting very, very anxious. And this is true. Anxiety is going nuts all over the planet. So I spent 5 years researching and writing a book about how to read your compasses and lower the anxiety that's getting between you and your right life. And I'm very excited about the book. It's coming out in 2025, but I would love to teach you about it before the book comes out. So this summer, I'm doing a course called The Wayfinder's Compass, Moving Beyond Anxiety. And you can check it out by going to marthabeck.com/compass. And we will have a fabulous time putting you on course for your North Star. Let's get to our topic du jour.
Very good idea. If you don't mind. Well, once again, we're doing a anxiety-related topic for good reason, because it's bloody relevant to all of us all the time, because it's freaking an anxious time. And I thought that what we might talk about today is anxiety in the culture and like what's going on there. Why is the culture so anxious? That's my question. Now you get to answer it. Congratulations, Martha Beck, and take it away.
Well, the culture is anxious because individuals are anxious, and we always try to control things when we get anxious. And so we create structures socially that are about controlling things. And basically, all the structures, organizations, and institutions of society sort of follow the anxiety that's emerging in individuals. Yeah.
Right. Right. And when we feel anxious, we want to control something. We want to control everything. And so that's what our culture is comprised of anxious people wanting to control things.
Yeah, but the irony is it doesn't work. The more you control and the more control-based you are, the more you create things that cause anxiety. Let me give you an example. I had a client once who went to high school in an inner city school where it was very dangerous. Like a lot of the students, well, he said everybody was so scared. We all carried weapons because we didn't know when we would have to defend ourselves. So then the school administrators, realizing that everybody had knives and things, said, we're going to make this so much safer. We're going to control these students by putting in metal detectors and having armed guards at every door. And my client just kind of looked at me and goes, you know, funny thing, that did not make me feel like I was in a safer place. It made me more anxious. So that's the way the spiral goes. We try so hard to control everything. And in our very efforts to control, being controlled is scary. Having an armed guard looking at you is scary. So control itself.
Going to need some more weapons to feel safe again.
Exactly.
Which is, to me, like such a great metaphor for America and how America... This absolutely, utterly bizarre culture of guns. And if the guns aren't working, we need more guns. And if people are still getting shot, it's because we don't have enough guns and we need guns in schools. Let's put more guns in schools. That'll solve it. It's so weird. It's like you're not safe. You don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. So you add something that makes you less safe, which makes you feel less safe, which makes you add something that makes you less safe, that makes you feel...
Exactly. And it's so interesting hearing non-Americans' perspectives on this, because America is such a gun culture that I kind of grew up being used to it. But then talking to people from other countries, they're like, you people are crazy with the guns. Like, what is it about you and guns? And we're like, I don't know. I've just watched 8,000 murders on TV by the time I'm 12. So
founding
I figure
fathers.
I need one.
Founding fathers.
We may be getting in trouble from pro-gun people out there, but
I don't think there's too many in our listenership.
They could shoot us.
Not anymore.
Did you see how I just had a fear reaction?
Yep.
Oh my gosh, they are armed and they're coming for us. What can we do? Oh, could I change the way I'm talking about this? Could we cut this out to control their effects, their reactions, so they don't hurt us? And now they're controlling me, and that is going to make me feel less safe because I've always got to guard against them. This is the way the brain works. And then it goes out and it can swallow the whole world, like it did in the arms race during, well, it's ongoing arms race, but it really started right after World War II. And, you know, going to elementary school, I was hiding under my desk to protect myself from an atomic bomb.
Yeah, and the amazing thing about that time is that both the United States and its, you know, its friends and the USSR and its friends were developed and made and hoarded enough nuclear weapons to completely destroy the entire planet so many times over, but they just kept adding them,
because
which is
it
the
makes
same
us
sort of
safer.
Psychosis. Yeah. Of,
yeah.
There is. Oh no, we can only destroy the world 19 times with
this. No, we can do it 25 times. We win.
It's- yeah, I believe we can destroy this entire planet.
Oh, for
25
sure.
times. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just need the right attitude. It's so funny because it's like the way that there's always this thread of maybe if we bought something. Maybe. Any, I don't care what's wrong with you. Uh-huh. Scared, mad, happy, bored. Have you considered buying something? Have you considered buying a new shirt or a nuclear weapon? Like, it's the metal detectors in the school. We and felt, hang on.
Yeah.
We felt scared.
Yes.
So we bought things.
Yes.
Right? We bought another knife.
Yes.
Because we felt scared.
I'll show you a knife.
Because we don't have any guns. We just got really big knives because we're so different from Americans. Yeah. So then it's like retail therapy for your anxiety, but with assault weapons or nuclear weapons. It's so funny. But, you know, like what's fascinating to not to be always the one who goes capitalism, but, you know, the war economy, like, so the Second World War, the war economy was amazing. It's what created the 1950s, mm-hmm. was making a ton of, you know, the prosperity of the 1950s in the States. And in the Western world, if you want to use that, mm-hmm. After the war, was war economies are good. You know, they make us rich.
Yeah.
And so let's, okay, so just the fact that we don't actually technically have a war anymore, don't worry about that. We have, what this is it's a cold, it's a chilly war.
Yes.
It's like, so don't just buy weapons, also buy a coat, buy a big hat. And it's just bonkers. It's a war economy all the time.
It is. And it's primordial. I mean, it obviously makes me think of squirrels.
Of course.
Because squirrels, part of the response to a fear thing for an animal that is a forager is to hoard.
Hoard, yeah.
So squirrels hoard huge amounts of acorns, and they actually fail to rediscover a full 80% of the acorns they bury. Mm-hmm. But in so doing, they create forests. So we created a whole economy by buying more guns.
Yeah, huh? And then we plant all our atomic weapons, and
grow up into mushroom clouds. Oh, yeah. Depressing.
Oh, God, there it goes.
It's making me anxious.
So, you know, the kind of question that I always like to try and figure out when we have these conversations is, like, how does an anxious populist group, mm-hmm. of people shore up or reinforce a culture? Like, why does the culture want us anxious is what I'm trying to say.
It's almost like there's this little feedback loop. Because we're anxious, one of the rules of anxiety is stay anxious or you won't be safe. So if you're not on guard all the time, you won't be safe. So we, in a weird way, that part of all our brains wants the culture to control everything, and then the culture becomes something that wants to control us. And anxious people willingly submit to control.
So the culture, as though it's an entity, but, you know, it's made up of all of us, we know this. But, like, so the culture knows that if we individually feel anxious, we will more willingly let it control us.
Yes.
And then it can, yeah.
You trade autonomy for protection. Mm. I mean, if you look at, like, the feudal system in Europe or the samurai system even in Japan, there will be a lord and he has swords and the right to kill everybody. And then below him are the people growing the rice or the barley or whatever. And the peasants, whatever they call that, they willingly support the guy in charge because he's the one with the sword who's going to, you know, fend off the enemies and keep everyone safe. But they are controlled by him, and he's at the top. and he's controlling everything. Then you get maniacs.
They're
at
also
the top.
Feeding him.
Exactly. They do everything for him. Everybody wants to be safe. And we try to do it by control. And we give control to the most controlling people who have the weapons of control. And then we feel safe for a minute, but not for very long. Because we're got in the weird, weird fear leads to control, leads to fear, leads to control, upward spiral of anxiety on a societal level.
That's so wild. So the even if we are made more safe by this control, it doesn't necessarily lead to us feeling more safe.
So true.
Right? Because of the way our brains are structured.
Yep.
So the feeling of safety doesn't always follow the reality of safety. So then if we start to feel unsafe, we can be further. Oh, it's just. It's nuts. So I am immediately reminded of an experience I once had in South Africa with you at Londolozi, where there was someone there that we met who had come, she lived in LA, she'd come to South Africa for a safari, and she couldn't sleep at night because she was staying awake with her phone, checking her home security system in LA, going from room to room to room, checking that no one was breaking into her house while she was away. And I'm saying, there were lions walking by outside her room. Not that she was in danger from those, but I'm saying, it's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah. She was both safe and in an environment where things could have, like, she needed to do things to remain safe in her environment, but she wasn't considering the environment she was in. The environment in her head was her house, where the creatures and the villains were breaking in nonstop, to the point where, and by watching it on her phone, she could fend this off, obviously. Right.
It's so weird, but it's such a great image of anxiety, like in the middle of the night, just watching. And also, by the way, home security system, app on your phone, video doorbells, alarm systems, security and retail therapy. Secure retail therapy.
And doom scrolling. Listen to this doom. It'll keep you, we'll all be safer if we all share this terrifying information about what might happen. Or, you know, it's just this allegiance we have to the idea that fear is the root of safety, and fear only creates more fear. I mean, wait, there's a healthy fear. If she'd said, oh my goodness, there are lions and leopards out there, I'll make sure that I've closed my door.
Yeah.
That's healthy fear. But staying up all night peering at your phone, thinking you can chase burglars away
with
by
your
magic
mind,
is just anxiety. Yeah.
What was the thing, I always ask you to say this and I never remember it myself, but about holding the plane in the air with your grip on the
It's from Irma Bombeck. She said, I alone in a plane full of sleeping passengers am keeping the jet in the air by pulling upward on the arms of my seat.
It's so good. Like, it's so funny because the more we think we're just rationally being, you know, trying to finding safety and securing safety, the more into magical thinking we get, and the more we're like, I'll control it with the power of my mind, meaning I'll control the world with the power of my anxiety, when the reality is we're being controlled by the same anxiety all the time.
I'm sorry.
I sound like a conspiracy theorist.
No, you're exactly right. And I'm going to put a tiny little bit of brain science in here. All of the anxiety stuff happens on the left side of the brain, and the right side of the brain puts it in a context that says, wait, let's be here now. And it calms us down. But the left hemisphere has this weird quirk where it refuses to acknowledge the existence of anything outside itself. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it tells a story, it believes it without question, regardless of the data. And that's why, you know, we know people that we thought were really pretty stable, who do their own personal development work and everything, who like ran off to bunkers to wait for the apocalypse, you know, I mean, and they really, really believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so wild.
It feels so truthy.
It feels truthy. Yeah. It has the vibe of truthiness.
So, Ro, where do you experience this in your own life?
So what do I do to feel safe?
Yeah. Where do you feel the spin of anxiety, and how do you engage with the economic structures and things of the culture that makes you feel safe?
I think what
I actually feeds into it
is I do ultimately spend money, but I in the actual thing of this is me being rational and rationally making myself safe is I do online research and I, you know, I read reviews and I read consumer reports and all of that. And, you know, like it's all keeping anxiety at bay stuff.
And I'm so grateful because you always get the most safe things and they really are safer. But I just feel safe all the time while you're going, oh boy, I know all the ways this could go wrong. So you, like, you're the one doing the research, so you know all the dangers. And I'm just like, what? That is safe? Thank you, Roe. That is good.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I've considered all the alternative possibilities.
And they're always there for you.
Yeah, yeah. What about you? What do you do?
Oh, but you do not take large handfuls of supplements every single day. Like,
multiple times a day.
Hello. I've seen the headlines. You know, mugwort is good for you. Eat more turmeric. I buy turmeric pills. I literally take turmeric in pill form because it's supposed to be good for you. And that it adds up to literal handfuls of food items, but in pill form.
Yeah. She has so many pills in her day.
And it's going to keep me safe, man.
Yeah.
Anybody who takes as much fish oil as I do will live forever.
Do you remember when we were going to buy a car and the whole thing about, because obviously cars are such a big one about safety in our society. And so we went to the showroom and this woman was explaining to us that this one car was so safe that if it got hit from the side, it would, the way that it was structured on the inside, you know, it sounded very truthy. It would actually make the car stronger if it actually got T-boned.
If someone offended you in traffic, this car would personally mess with their heads.
Yeah.
But hadn't you done the research and that's why we were buying that car in the first place?
Of course I had.
Of course. Then we went to the insurance people.
Oh.
And the insurance broker had like a spiritual experience.
I don't think it was spiritual.
I wasn't going to go there.
It didn't sound spiritual to me. He just, as soon as we started describing the car we'd bought, it's just like, that car, it's so safe. It's so safe.
Oh, it's so safe. He was very happy about that. And that's not a bad, I mean, it is, we bought the car. It's good. But
I have to say, I don't always feel when I'm, you know, hurtling along the New Jersey Turnpike, I'm aware of it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm aware of being a little person in space and I'm aware that, like, whatever car you're in, it's when you're going fast and you hit something, it's not good.
Yeah. Wait. Go back. And we know that. And it's so funny that they used to think that human physiology could not tolerate speeds over 13 miles an hour because that was as fast as a sailing ship could move and nothing moved that fast. Yeah. Anyway, it's great that as things get faster, we get more safety guidelines and when the cars get safer and safer, and it's all wonderful. Until it turns your life into an obsession with controlling every variable of fear and you live guided by this tiny crunch of fear in your bones, it makes your life horrible.
Yeah. Guided by a tiny crunch of fear. So we're like making all our decisions based on this one sensation and a tiny sensation in our bodies that's like, and that becomes...
It's not so much a tiny sensation. It's such a massive sensation that it crunches us down into a tiny point that is only afraid. It winds us so tightly into our anxiety that we almost vanish from every other part of our lives.
Oh, and that's interesting because that's not how I understood you when you said a tiny crunch of fear. Oh. I thought you meant that we would allow our entire lives to be guided and these huge decisions to be guided on us wanting to alleviate even the tiniest little crunch.
You make a solid point.
Because it's ultimately going to spiral into the big
It works either way. We react to the tiniest fears with huge reactions, and then we have huge reactions that lead us to our tiniest decisions, and everything is just fear, 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 anxiety, 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 broadcasting, replicating, fractaling itself into bigger and bigger societal institutions.
Right. And then we aren't ever making decisions for ourselves or our families or our communities or whatever that are based on anything but anxiety. Yeah. And also like this desire to alleviate the anxiety that you currently feel in your body. Like,
yeah,
if I can just make this feeling go away, yeah, I'll sacrifice everything.
One more weird irony that's quickly is I've worked with so many people who are in, they grew up in houses where there was an adult who was violent. And so they had a terror of the world being violent, but they chose like partners or spouses who were violent because in a violent world, you need a violent person to protect you. So then they'd end up being the victims of violence in their homes, but they'd say, no, I'm going to stay with that person because that is the only way I can stay safe. It's the same insane logic, circular logic at all levels.
It is. It is. It's absolutely fascinating and absolutely horrifying. So, all right. So I have a pretty good sense of that. How do we come to our senses in this insane system?
Well, obviously I have this completely figured out. Not, but I do ponder about it, and I have some thoughts, and I'll tell you about them, and you'll tell me about yours in a minute. Hello, the lovely peoples. This is Martha, inviting you to a free masterclass that I have made called 5 Paths to Your Purpose. Probably the most common question I get from people is, how do I find my purpose? Why don't I feel that I'm on purpose? Well, it turns out there are certain things you have to do to find your purpose, and I broke them down into 5, and I made a little masterclass about it. So if you'd like to see it, just go to marthabeck.com/purpose, and you will be able to watch it without any charge at all.
All right, how do we figure it out?
Figuring out the culture of anxiety and how to do better. Not a problem. You kind of have to start on the inside. You have to begin by being the first one who's willing to work with your whole brain instead of just the left side of your brain. Bringing in the right side, which is all about the present moment and feelings of connection and curiosity. That is meant to balance the fear side of the brain. And the fear side of the brain doesn't want to let go. But if we say consciously, we're going to go to a whole brain way of seeing, then we're off to a good start. Read Jill Bolte Taylor's book.
Right. So it's about like we're in this culture that's so dominated by this one extreme sort of way of seeing things. And you're talking about sort of integrating it. So it seems like there's 2 questions to me anyway. And one is like, there's the moments where we personally are feeling anxious and how can we come to our senses in that sort of acute state of anxiety. And then there's, there's that sort of more general sort of thing that we talk about, like we're living in this culture. How do we live in this culture, which is anxious? So, you know, I think we know a lot of the stuff about what to do when you're in that heightened state.
The immediate things are physiological. You kind of fake the physiology of someone who's not anxious. So you take low, slow breaths, long, slow breaths. You let your body shake or move because shaking is the way animals process adrenaline and cortisol that are secreted when we're in a fight-flight state. The body wants to move, and if we don't let it move, if we don't let it shake at least, that fear gets trapped in our bodies and it exhibits as long-term anxiety often.
Dancing is a huge one of that. Like I won't dance in front of other people, but I'll dance by myself. And I'm just realizing that that's the same sort of mechanism as shaking, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I remember I once had a client who was a professional athlete, and he was also really brilliant and also very, very anxious. And he would work out all day long. And then he would go to clubs that had the heaviest of heavy metal, and he would do like headbanging dances. And I just thought, oh my God, that must be just wearing you down. But it took that level of noise and shaking and bashing and thrashing on the dance floor for him to channel all the adrenaline and other stress hormones that were constantly filling his bloodstream. You know, that so there are ways every culture does that, some kind of dancing and shaking. But people in offices don't, right? Like,
right.
We don't go there.
Okay.
So once we've done those really immediate physiological things, you just drop into your sensory experience. That opens the right side of the brain, the whole brain, especially imaginative creativity that's not about danger. It's about maybe something fun in the future. And I've watched you do this. I've watched you use fun ideas about the future to sort of lighten a moment.
I didn't even realize that that was an expression of creativity. It's so amazing. So people who listen to this show a lot know I'm obsessed with van life. And recently I've also added the exotic train travel to my list of enthusiasms. And I will gladly go off into fantasies about buying and restoring a van.
She does. The reason I'm laughing is that almost every day she'll say something. We'll just be sitting there and she's like Karen's always the doom and gloom. She's like, oh my God, do you know what's happening in XYZ or Z? And then we all get nervous. And then Ro says, oh my gosh, this woman has the best van life. And she just goes off into this. And we were sort of going through the ideas for the podcast. And I said, well, you do creative imagination with van life. And she just went, this is a quote, I want to talk about van life at some length.
And now I'm going to do so. I got so excited because van life, guys, life. You know, you get in a van, it's so cute and you can decorate it yourself. Some people decorate it with rocks and crystals that they've found along their journey in the van.
Well, okay, you're talking me into this because, you know, visual arts, decorating your van with crystals and being in nature. Like, we co-evolved with trees and other animals and our nervous systems really calm down there.
Just one sec before you go on to the evolution thing.
Yeah.
So some people decorate their vans with messages from people they've met on the road while they've been traveling in their van. Some have toilets, some don't. Do you remember actually the other night, Marty, that we I felt like, because I'd had a night where I'd stayed up and watched quite a bit of YouTube into the
yes,
night about van life, and I felt like I was at the point where I was almost cheating on Marty and Karen with van life. And so I felt like the next day that when we had a sit down together, family time, I said, listen, I've got to tell you something. The whole van life thing, it's I really mean it. I'm at a new phase with it, and I just want you to know that at some point I see myself getting a van.
She had to make an announcement as if she hadn't talked about it for an hour a day. You know what I think we should do? We should get a van. You can decorate it with all the crystals you want. But then in the passenger seat in the front, I will, of course, be lying down on the bed because that's what I do all day. But in the passenger seat will be the insurance man from that insurance company going, oh my God, it's so safe in here. It's so safe.
I don't like it. Just picture him in my van.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think vans are that. I don't know how safe they are. Anyway, don't worry. But Marty, just imagine if you could lie down on a bed in a van going somewhere while lying down. It's amazing.
And it sounds a lot like homelessness.
Something about evolution or some shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anxiety culture, evolution. Yes. You are going to be... Did you see the Blair Witch movie?
Was that called? Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, that movie was made with two sticks and $8. And it was basically a bunch of teenagers holding cameras to their mouths while they went... Oh, I'm so scared. Look at my stick. Oh, I got another stick.
There's a stick tied to a stick tied to a stick.
Okay, so that's what your society is doing to you all the time. It's like, I've got two sticks and I'm in terror. And you will feel, your nervous system will tell you to get involved. You must, at that moment, at the moment you feel yourself sucked into mindless fear, you have to go, that is just a tiny crunch of fear and I'm not going to take the bait. Yeah.
That is so freaking funny because I genuinely thought when you started talking about Blair Witch that you were going to try and segue into how nature is really good for calming us down. And what we should really do if we're in anxiety is to go out in the woods like the Blair Witch Project kids did. And I was so looking forward to seeing how you were going to spin that out. And I'm disappointed.
I'm just grateful that you didn't immediately go to, I will drive a van into nature and I will stay there forever.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they'd had a van.
Yeah. They would have been better off.
They would have been fine.
No, it would have gotten to them in the van. It's not safe.
They could have driven away. That's the whole point.
Traffic accidents. That is not as safe as our car.
Could bump into a witch.
But this is radically countercultural to say, everybody around me is nervous. I may choose not to join.
So if, when we're talking about, so we talked about like a little, like acute anxiety and how to sort of manage that when we're individually in that state. But then there's the other question that I had for you was like, how can we resist anxiety culture generally and just the kind of return to our own nature as a way of life?
Yeah, I think it begins with the sensation of being pulled off your own foundation by the anxiety around you, because society is going to be the Blair Witch Project. It's going to keep revving up your fear, and it will feel very true to you in some moments that you should join in.
Because we can't expect society to change. We can't expect this perfect system to...
But if you can drop in, like that woman in South Africa, if she just dropped in and said, okay, I'm in a room, it's safe, there are wild animals outside, there's nothing I can do about my house in LA, so I'm going to relax. That is the radically countercultural thing to do.
You know, I actually think that here, as in a lot of the stuff we talk about, is that most of the battle is actually getting to that point of recognizing where the culture is invisibly working on us.
Like, oh, absolutely.
That it's not even that there's so much a process once you know. It's more like it's the process of learning to question the culture. So like, that's what we do on this podcast is trying to make the invisible visible when it comes to these kind of messages that we get. And so, you know, in a way, as a way of life, when you feel that tiny crunch of fear, it's like, take a minute, question it. Am I sure that I'm not safe right now?
Right.
From burglars in LA.
Exactly. And that's so brilliant because the very part of the brain that goes into fear, if you take a left, right turn, if you take a right turn, it goes into curiosity. So there's this psychiatrist named Judson Brewer who wrote Unwinding Anxiety, really good book. And one thing that he describes doing is taking really anxious clients in groups out into the woods with one of his colleagues. And they would wait, and everybody was like really anxious. And then he and his colleague would both just look in the same direction and say, And all of these anxious people would be like, what? And they would just say, And everybody would start going and looking, and their anxiety would be gone.
Because curiosity can't coexist with...
Yeah,
anxiety.
Curiosity steers you the other direction. So that am I sure I'm not safe right now is a perfect segue into a whole brain experience that's more balanced.
So we just got to keep asking questions.
Uh-huh. So
and
say, and stay wild.
We hope you're enjoying Bewildered. If you're in the USA and want to be notified when a new episode comes out, text the word wild to 570-873-0144. We're also on Instagram. Our handle is Bewildered Podcast. You can follow us to get updates, hear funny snippets and outtakes, and chat with other fans of the show. Bewildered is produced by Scott Forster with support from the brilliant team at MBI. And remember, if you're having fun, please rate and review, and stay wild.
You know, what I'm seeing out in the world is a lot of fear and a growing amount of despair. Maybe you're feeling that way too, because the ways our culture has taught us to navigate the world, to navigate our lives, they are failing us. We need a new language. We need a new set of tools to find our way individually and as a group. And I know we can still do this. I put everything I do know about it into Wayfinder Life Coach Training. And the tools that I teach there are to help people redefine how we relate to each other, how we make a living, how we do community. We can only change the world for the better if we redefine how we think. And the world needs Wayfinders now more than ever. So please go to marthabeck.com and you'll find your way.